I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As the Bucks prepare to face Washington in the NFC wildcard game, we can make a case for Tampa Bay to win that game. We'll also tell you why they could lose. And if they did, would you consider it a successful season for the Bucks and Tom Brady? And the Pro Football Hall of Fame 15 finalists are out for the class of 2021. John Lynch and Rondé Barber both made it. Who you got? We'll discuss all that and more on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay with Tom Jones, my former radio partner, longtime columnist of the Tampa Bay Times, now with the Poynter Institute. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Before we get to Tom, I just wanted to say there was a, I think it was in Pro Football Talk, or somebody had reported, and we had alluded to this, I think, before, I know I've written it, that the Atlanta Falcons are planning to interview one Todd Bowles, the Bucs defensive coordinator, for their head coaching job. That'll take place sometime next week. They can't interview any of the current coaches that are involved in the playoffs this week, except for, obviously, the teams that got the bye, Kansas City and the Green Bay Packers and such. The Falcons are going to hire a general manager as well as a head coach. They want to kind of pair those two gentlemen together to where there's some, you know, sort of a symbiotic relationship where they're both acceptable to one another, work together. I got a sense, a strong sense, that Bowles is a pretty good candidate there. You know, a lot will depend on just, you know, who they can or can't get. I mean, obviously guys like Eric Bieniemy has interviewed already. You know, but they have in mind a certain type of coach. The funny thing is that Arthur Blank is entrusting Rich McKay, of course, the former general manager here, to line up some of these candidates and interview them with him. And if you know anything about Rich and you know, the success he had in hiring, you know, Tony Dungy, which sort of came out of nowhere. Tony was like their third choice and interviewed twice here. Todd Bowles has a lot of Dungy-esque qualities. Defensive-minded, obviously, but also a guy that's just very steady and a developer of players and not an excuse maker, not a guy that thinks, you know, we got to have this or we got to have that. Like, he knows how to build. He's fairly steady. And he did not have a great track record with the New York Jets. He went the first season, I think he won 10 games, and they had like three straight losing seasons after that. I think a lot of people look at that situation and say, well, first-time head coach, but also it's the Jets. A dysfunctional organization. So be interesting because, you know, the Bucks obviously would like to hold on to Bowles. He's a big part of why they've won. You know, they've got other guys ready to step in and take that job. But, you know, even so, I mean, Todd is the guy that, you know, it's his defense. He's the one that's called it all these years. And it would be a big, big loss, but one that I'm sure Bruce Arians would be thrilled, you know, to suffer because he coached Todd Bowles back at Temple years and years ago. So, you know, Casey Rogers would be probably the next guy up on the staff that would take over that defense, was with Todd with the Jets. If he didn't go with him to Atlanta, you just don't know how that would play out. But so Todd Bowles will do that after this playoff game. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. A lot of those are just virtual interviews and whatnot, but interesting nonetheless. All right, Tom Jones joins us now. And, Tommy, we haven't been able to say this for about 13 years. The Bucks,
The Bucks are headed to FedEx Field.
I don't know what they call FedEx Field. What did Berman used to call it?
I don't know. I don't remember.
It wasn't the big toaster. That was
that's Arizona. But, listen, it's been a while. It's been a minute. You probably remember it. Were you in Minnesota? I don't even know where you were back in 2000 and what, 7?
The last time they made the playoffs. No, I was here. I wasn't.
You were.
But yeah,
okay,
I mean,
sorry.
We talked. That's all right. It was probably a forgettable time for me.
It seems like a long time ago.
No, it was. We talked about this a little bit. Like, I barely remember that game. They played the Giants, right? They played the Giants and
they
lost.
Played the Giants. Giants went on and actually beat Tom Brady as a sixth seed.
Right.
They were, you know, barely in the playoffs, and they made their run.
Yeah, barely remember any of that. Barely remember it.
Yeah.
I think Tom Brady was only he was only 35 at the time.
That's right, yeah. It was only 13 years ago, so he'd be 30. He was 30 years old. A mere pup.
Yeah, right, exactly.
What did he know at 30? The point is that it's been a long time. And, look, I think, you know, we can get into this a little bit, you know, this boom or bust sort of mentality. You don't hire a 43-year-old quarterback thinking that we got plenty of time to build. They're trying to win the Super Bowl, and they want to win it right away. However, I digress. Listen, what he's done, in my opinion, and what the Bucs have done, but led by him in particular, is nothing short of remarkable. I mean, I don't know the next 43-year-old that's going to come close to this, but the man threw 40 touchdown passes and 4,600 yards. That's the most touchdown passes ever. It's the most, second most of his career, the most since he threw 50 one year, you know, when they went, 17-1. And lost in the Super Bowl to Eli Manning. So is it a success, or do they got to go all the way? Is there just no compromise here that, you know what, you got to go to the Super Bowl, you got to win it, or it's just a waste of time?
I'll answer that question better in like 2 weeks. But I'll say this. My initial thought is, as long as they don't lose to Washington, which is an awful football team, we can talk about that in a minute.
I'm sure
we will. Yeah. But as long as they don't just completely throw up all over themselves on Saturday.
Yeah.
I think and then whatever their next game is, and say they're competitive. They just can't get like blown out their next game with whoever they play after that. But up like everything up until now, I think this has been wildly successful. I don't feel like they need to win the Super Bowl to feel like this was a successful season. I know what the talk was, Rick. I know they brought him in. Tom Brady's not going to be satisfied with anything less than the Super Bowl. Neither will Bruce Arians. But if you're a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan or a Tampa Bay Buccaneers follower who's been around, you've been following this franchise for a long time, this is the good stuff, in my opinion. I don't think they have to win the whole thing to say this was a gamble worth taking. Now, if they come out and went 6-10 and Tom Brady looked like he was 53 instead of, 33, which is what he looks like right now, then I would say, yeah, what a waste. This was a pipe dream. But come on, this, how can you say this hasn't worked? It's worked. Sure it has, right?
Yeah, I think it has. I think that, you know, when they did sign him, no one necessarily expected it to turn out this way with respect to COVID and no offseason, no training. I think it took longer because of all those factors, maybe until after the bye week. Look, after the bye week, and we've said this many times, you don't apologize for who's next on your schedule. They're all NFL teams. You have to play them in order when they come out in April. But since the bye week, they've averaged 37 points a game. They've been over 40 back-to-back games, and you know, four times this season. Scoring points hasn't been a problem, you know, since early on in the year. And I don't think it's an accident. I think that, you know, time in on the practice field, continuity, Byron Leftwich figuring out what Tom Brady needs, whether it's play action or pre-snap motion, whatever, all that stuff I think has come to play, and the work they put in is starting to show off a little later than it would have if they'd have had an offseason. You know, they got the Saints early. That was kind of a bad break for them from a division standpoint. I'm not sure they would have won the division, Tom, if they did have a preseason. I got to be honest with you. I think the Saints are better. I think they've proven that the last 2 years. However, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, look, this is a franchise that has been dead in the water. You know what they do on Mondays after the season? It's called Black Monday. They fire people. Right. They fire everybody. That's what goes on. Believe me, I've covered I used to hate the end of the season, not because there wasn't any football games to go to, not because I missed going to one Buck place. I hated it because it meant usually one thing. They were going to fire the coaches, fire all their assistants, and then they were going to go on some kind of a search, right?
Right.
Which you're dog-ass tired. You're going to come through a whole season, and now you get to do the minute-to-minute, according to my sources, the Buccaneer most probably will be interviewing so-and-so from such-and-such a team. And then tomorrow it'll be somebody else. And you go on. And this can last. When they hired John Gruden, it lasted like 36 days.
Right.
So you don't have a life. And I know I'm complaining about my job, but
no.
You know,
but listen, I mean, this is look. This is bad for the organization.
It's bad.
For, it's bad.
It's
for
really
everybody.
Bad.
It's bad for the fans because the fans are sitting there. Yeah, I mean, if the biggest thing you're looking forward to is like who's going to be our next offensive coordinator,
you're sunk.
Yeah, then you're having a bad franchise because in other places they're having figuring out where the parade might be.
Exactly.
And so, or like, there's nothing. You mentioned this last time when we talked about this on the podcast last week, Rick. Like, this is the good stuff. This is
this
what
the, is
the, fans,
for the fans.
This
yes.
stuff is for the fans. So all week long this week,
and
think about places like wherever, all the in Minnesota where they're like, oh my gosh, how we Philadelphia. Like all the mess that's going on. New England, where Tom Brady used to be.
18 other cities, right.
Yeah, all these cities are like, we're not even mentioning, like think of some of the cities that are trying to figure out who their next coach is going to be. Houston and Jacksonville and the Jets. What a train wreck. That's the Bucs for the last 13 years.
Yes.
Now is the time, like, hey, we're talking about, hey, is Mike Evans going to play? Hey, what? Hey, did you hear what Chase Young had to say? Like, that's this is the fun stuff, you know? So, and this is all because of Tom Brady. I'm not all because of Tom Brady, but in large part because of Tom Brady. I believe that.
I believe he's the biggest part. Let's put it that way. I mean,
sure. Right.
You know, for the most part, you know, did Devin White get better? Yes. Did they add some veterans or some rookies like Tristan Wirfs and you know, Antoine Winfield Jr. and those guys helped, right? Did they get some free agents? But Gronkowski doesn't come out of retirement without Tom Brady. Antonio Brown isn't here without Tom Brady. And you know, they don't win 11 games. Tom, they've only won 11 games like four times, in the history of the franchise.
You talk about they didn't win a division, but, I mean, boy, 11 games, how much – it couldn't have gotten much better, really.
No.
You know?
I mean, people will say, well, they didn't beat enough teams with winning records and all that, and I would agree with you. And, you know, they certainly have to beat them now. You know who they did beat? The number one seed in the NFL in the NFC, which is Green Bay. Suddenly that doesn't count though, because now Green Bay's better. Now Green Bay is this mythical, you know, MVP hurling quarterback, who really didn't have much better year than Tom Brady and who was beaten by him. But that aside, you know, I do. I don't think any of this happens without TB12. And I wanted to sit back and kind of see, okay, I've watched him, you know, in all the playoff games over the years. And, you know, I've done this as long as he's been in the NFL and actually longer. So it has been remarkable to see him go to so many Super Bowls. But when you talk about, you know, he's definitely at the end now. And so there's not many more opportunities for him to take a team there. And you're right. That's his singular goal. That's why he chose to come here. But having said all that, as great as he was, and he went to nine out of 20 years, almost every the year he was in the Super Bowl, there were years, 11 of them, they didn't make it. Did they consider those bad years in New England?
Of course not.
Were their fans that disenchanted?
No, they set the bar that high.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Victim of his own success.
Exactly. But you mentioned he's thrown for 40 touchdowns and all, you know, all the success he's had on the
yards,
field, right? Yeah, and all this stuff. You're around this team every day, Rick. I'm not around them anymore like I used to be, so you could probably speak to this more than I can. But just judging from watching your coverage and all that, there seems to be a little bit of a culture shift too. It seems to be that there's a leadership there that, and with all due respect to Jameis, I'm not trying to dump on Jameis, but he just didn't
have
to.
Oh, please
do. Well, yeah, I mean.
We expect you to.
No, I mean, let's be honest. He had never done anything at the NFL
level. You just nailed it.
Tom Brady walks through the door and he said, hey, I've been to 9 of these things. Let me show you how to do it.
He's a living legend in the game. Like he is a wing of the Pro Football Hall of Fame when he gets there all by himself.
Right.
You know?
And so when he has a bad game, when he has a bad game early in the year and he was throwing interceptions, we're saying, okay, we got to figure this thing out because something's not right. Something's off. Is it the receivers? When Jameis threw the interceptions, like, oh, here we go. This guy.
Exactly.
Here we go again.
And the problem is, and this was something Jameis battled, and I think all young quarterbacks battle it, and they're going to battle it in Miami with Tagovailoa. They're going to battle it, you know, in Jacksonville if they take Trevor Lawrence. They're going to battle it wherever these young quarterbacks go.
Daniel Jones in New York.
Daniel Jones. I mean, here's the problem. You're the leader of the football team. Mm-hmm. Period. Right. By definition, you're the quarterback of a football team. And oh, by the way, when you're drafted that high, you're going to the crappiest football team on the planet. Okay.
Right.
So that's how they got you. All right. But at the end of the day, you know, you haven't accomplished anything yourself. So it's really difficult you know, to tell Mike Evans, for example, you know, how you want him to run this dig route or how you want him to stem, you know, the stick route. Like, how do you get on a guy when you've done nothing in the league? You're trying to figure it out. You're trying to spit out the play in the huddle. You're trying to, you know, work on your mechanics and your footwork, and you're trying to read protections and get guys lined up. You're doing all this stuff for the first time and learn how to play under center. And, you know, I mean, it's, you know, you're learning Mandarin Chinese, you know, and then the next day you're learning some other language. So you don't have the breadth of experience or accomplishment at the NFL level. Sure. Did you win a national champion? Yeah. Were you the best player in the college football? Sure. None of that matters when you get to the NFL. It matters where you get drafted in the NFL. But once you get here, it don't matter, other than you're going to get a lot of chances to prove that they were right. And, you know, and so, and look, I'm not saying that the guys weren't receptive to Jameis's leadership, because he was beloved, as most, you know, a lot of quarterbacks are. But when he went up to a guy and, you know, what could he tell him? You know, hey, man, you just cost me that interception because you didn't finish that route, or you didn't read the leverage right, or I thought you were going, you know, when Tom Brady says it, as Bruce Arians has said all year long, he goes, I can say it and scream to him blue in the face. He goes, Tom Brady says it. It's like, boom, done. You know,
that's right.
Like, he's like, he says, it's the greatest thing in the world. I got a coach on the field in the huddle, because they're not going to tell Tom Brady no. You know, it's like, lead us. Please lead us to where you have been, to the promised land. You've been to the mountaintop. We want to go with you. Tell us. We'll walk up this trail. Where do we go? What do we do? Which way? And so, yes, that is, you know, I've always said this. Winning is the culture change.
That's right.
Winning, it's not, hey, we got to change. What I love about this, every coach is going to be hired, and there's going to be like seven or eight of them, I think, this year, seven, I think. They're all going to stand up there, and they're going to try to win the press conference. And most of them will. And I guarantee you, to a man, you can go back and run the transcripts. They're all going to talk about changing the culture. You know what? I'm here. We got to change culture. Hey, we got a culture we got to change. We're going to instill a culture of winning. Every one of them. And I'm like, dude, culture is winning. It is a chicken and the egg thing. But, you know, do you have to learn how to do things right before you win? Yes, you do. But when you win, that's when you know the culture has changed.
Yeah, I heard somebody talking the other day about Urban Meyer and whether Urban Meyer would make it as a head coach in the NFL, and how, because he's never coached at the NFL level, and any, you know, as an assistant, because a lot of guys that
they have
at least, like Nick Saban was like on an NFL coaching staff before he went on to you know, I know he didn't do great with the Dolphins, but it wasn't.
He was with the Browns with Belichick for years, yeah.
But the big thing that people bring up, and I think I saw your man Peter King talking about this, is that when the biggest adjustment for a lot of these college coaches is, or it's not that Urban Meyer doesn't know football, he doesn't know football, and he can probably deal with the personalities at the NFL level. It's, are you going to be able to accept going to a place where you're going to lose 13 games next year? Like, you've, it
for
took
some
you
of these
7 years,
Tom,
to lose 13
five
games.
Right.
So are you cool with going? And you talk about culture change. That's the hard part, is putting up with all those losses. Well, here with Tom Brady, that's unacceptable, and it's not going to be okay. You know, and it was, and look, what they had before with, and I'll put out the, and not just to throw Jameis under the bus, Gerald McCoy was the same way. It's like, what have you done? You haven't done anything at this level. You're a great player. I respect you. You're a leader.
You haven't
won.
But
you're the leader because you're the only thing we got.
Right.
Now you bring in somebody who's got, like Gronk. I'm sure Gronk's made more of an impact than what we've seen on the field.
Way more. And the great thing about Gronk is he's exactly, like, unlike some players, I mean, you know, you get the public persona. The goofball you see, he's exactly that. Like, people love playing with him. But, yeah, no, he's – all those guys have brought sort of, you know, the focus, the attitude, how to work. But not just how to work. A lot of – you know, first of all, everybody works hard, right? I was like, everybody, you know, first man in, last man out.
Yeah, right.
But are you doing – are you working smart? You know what I mean? Are you really – you know, in Brady's case, like, are you getting everything out of every rep? Are you – doing it right all the time, you know. You're going to win each day. You can't do anything about tomorrow. You got to prepare today, and then you have your best Thursday. And they all say that, but I think Brady lives it. you know, and this is the only way he knows how to do it, and it's been successful for him. So guys will follow people with that kind of resume. And to answer your question, I don't know. I don't think they get to the playoffs. I don't think they win 11 games. I don't think they do any of this stuff without Tom Brady.
Well, let me ask you the question that you asked me, though. Let me give you the scenario. Let me lay out the scenario for you.
Yep.
They beat Washington comfortably. Mm-hmm. And then the next game they would play who? Maybe Seattle?
Green Bay. Or Seattle. New Orleans, most likely.
Okay. And say they're competitive but don't win. But it's a, you know, 31-24 type
they
game.
They lose to in the second
they,
round?
They lose in the second round, but they're competitive.
Yeah. Good game, they lose. Okay.
Good game, they lose to a team that's probably better than they are.
Yeah.
At that point, how would you qualify the season? How would you quantify it?
Well, I mean, I think we're pretty close to agreement, at least, Tom. I don't know the way you feel, but I think it's a successful year.
Yeah, I do too.
And the reason I say that is that you have to understand what Tom Brady came to. You know, were there good players here? Yeah, that's why he came. Were there money for free agents? Yeah. But there's always been money for free agents. You know, was it a division that, you know, you're generally competitive in, you know, in that, you know, New Orleans was good, but you didn't know about the other? Yeah. And that's been like that for years. But what changed was him. You know, what changed was protecting the football. I mean, they went from 112 turnovers, you know, 112 points off turnovers, 30 interceptions and you know, some five or six, 41 total turnovers to about like 16, you know what I'm saying? Like, or 12, something like that. I mean, it was ridiculous. Like, he completely changed the way the games went, and the belief is a big thing at that position. You want to believe that no matter what it was, and they came back from 17 down from the Chargers. They've been behind a lot in the games this season, even the ones that they won, some that they almost came back and won. But you don't get that without his body of work. You don't get that with a rookie quarterback until he does it, until he goes out there and proves he can do it and do it consistently, not just once. I'll give you an example. Kyler Murray earlier this year had the Hail Mary, right?
Right.
They were getting their doors beat in, and they get to fourth and you know, miracle, and he throws one, and it is the prayer is answered. For the whole week, everybody's talking about how Kyler Murray should be in the Pro Bowl, and he was, and that this was the team that was on their way, and they won on a Hail Mary. Right, I mean, it's less than 2% chance you're going to catch it. And then they've tanked ever since, you know. They had a horrible finish to their season and missed the playoffs.
Right.
So, you know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, no. I mean, I watched a game last week with Pittsburgh and Cleveland needed that win. And this week everybody's talking about, oh, Baker Mayfield, turn the corner. You know, They didn't play anybody, and they lost on because the Steelers
now their coach is out. Yeah.
A two-point conversion. I mean, they nearly missed the playoffs. And what would be the narrative of Baker Mayfield be at that point, you know?
Right.
Or like with Jameis, you talk about just the belief, just the confidence. Look, Jameis had a lot of good games.
He did.
With the Tampa Bay Bucks.
He did.
There was also, he could go out there and play lights out, but every possession you're holding your breath, like, is this the one he's going to throw?
There's a mistake coming. Yeah.
Is this the one he's going to kill us? It's just going to kill us. Is this the pick six possession on this
right.
one? And with Brady, not that Brady never makes a mistake. Certainly he's thrown interceptions.
He made a bunch early on.
Yeah, but at this point, I'm sure when they get in that huddle, no matter what the score is, no matter what the situation is, you look at Tom Brady and go, it's the GOAT. If I don't know that we're going to win this game, but if we're going to win it, that's the guy I'd want leading me. He's one of like five guys in the NFL I'd want as my quarterback at this point. You know,
I don't know how many athletes you've covered that at an advanced age could still dominate their position the way Brady has. I will say that there will be other quarterbacks because I think guys in general are taking better care of themselves. I imagine that Aaron Rodgers has a chance to play until he's 40. I imagine that Russell Wilson may do it. You know what I mean? Like, there might be other guys coming behind Tom because of Tom and Drew Brees, who's 41. I think this is his last year. I'm willing to say that in my lifetime, despite all that, despite the, you know, 40s, the new 30, that you'll never see what he's done again. You'll never see a guy at his age.
I agree.
Throw 40 touchdowns, 10, 11 interceptions, 4,600 something yards, and take, in his first year, a team that had won Bupkis for more than 12 years and take him to the playoffs. And maybe go deep. We don't know.
Well, and showing no signs whatsoever that he's close to the end.
No. I mean, his arm, it looks live. Yeah. You know, and I think some of that, you know, was, I think that was calculated too. I mean, old bones don't do well in the cold. And he's come down here where it's warmer, like most retirees, and it's not as brutal on your body. And you know what else he's gotten, which he didn't get in New England? Days off. Bruce Arians has said, you're not practicing today. And that was a shock to Brady at times. You know, it was like, what do you mean I'm not practicing? No, I don't want you to throw at all. It's, you know, it's got to save your arm for late in the year, December, whatever. Because he likes to throw. He's one of these guys that wants to throw all the time.
He's a gym rat. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
he's gonna have to shoot the other thing, too. And he's surrounded by talent, and it's clear because I think if he were still in New England, what a mess that was.
Just a dumpster, yeah.
And I think if he were there, it's not like they would be 11-5 with him. I think he just proved why he wanted to get out, because
they weren't helping him.
They weren't helping him. And now he's surrounded by talent down here. There's no question in my mind, though, that we're seeing something that we've never seen before, and I'm not likely to see again. As you mentioned, there's reason to believe that guys like Aaron Rodgers can play for a while more. But I also don't know, Rick, that we're going to see that many. A, because the money is so great right now that, like, guys aren't playing for money. Tom Brady's not playing because he needs the money.
No.
At this point. And
no.
Aaron Rodgers doesn't need any more money.
No.
And, I think we're going to see Ben Roethlisberger hanging up in the next year or two. It's not about the
After
money.
After he gets his $30 million, it might be about the money for Ben.
Well, I think it's like 41. I think it's like $41 million. It's like something stupid. Yeah. Okay, for Ben, it is the money.
For Ben, it's the money.
But I think for a lot of these guys, they don't need the money, and I don't know that they have the commitment to their health. Tom Brady's a lunatic, man, when it comes to his health.
Sacrifices a lot. I mean, he really does sacrifice a lot. I don't think many people are willing to make that commitment year-round. You know, a lot of guys, you know, they're going to do the gym thing. They're going to, you know, try to eat right and you know, get sleep and you know, do the perfunctory things. But what Brady does is, like, next level, right? Yeah. With the plyometrics and, you know, what he does with TB12 and Alex Guerrero and, you know, the nutrition and, you know, I mean, whatever the hell it is. I mean, I haven't bought his book. I haven't done his diet. It doesn't look appealing to me. It doesn't look appetizing to me. It doesn't, you know, but I do know that he spends a lot. He works really hard at it, and it's constant, like, you know, right down to how much water he drinks. I mean, everything he does is to try to get as much out of his physical, you know, abilities at this point of his life. And frankly, you know, to stop his aging, you know, from a flexibility standpoint, from all those things. So athletically, he's kind of a freak. That, I mean, the sacrifice, his ability to sacrifice what most people in his position would not, is what separates him, because he's just so driven to win.
Right.
You know, and he almost, like, all the great players, you've known this, Tom, like, the greatest players always had the biggest chips, right? Even if they would make stuff up if they didn't.
Right,
you know,
sure,
Jordan
sure.
was like that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of who Brady is. Like, he's the guy that's going to walk around with a 199 card in his pocket and say, nobody thought I was any good, you know? And now his motivation is, so everybody just wants me to quit. That's why they keep saying this stuff. They want to run me out of here. I mean, you know what? I'm not ready. How about that? How do you like that? You're not going to run me away. You're not going to tell me I can't do it, because I can still do it. You just want me to retire so you can win. You're tired of me winning. Watch this.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm going to win again. So
there's no chance, no chance that they go into Washington and lose that game, is there?
Oh, sure there is. Are
no,
you kidding?
Come on. No,
you
no, there's
watch
no chance.
The National Listen, no chance. The last 2-7-9 teams to win their divisions, you know what happened? They won their first round games.
Ain't happening.
They won their games. No, you know who coached one of those teams? Ron Rivera.
Riverboat Ron.
Riverboat Ron. You can't kill him, man. I mean, thank God he's doing great. He beat cancer. Like, he has. Think about what Ron Rivera inherited. Seriously. Have you thought about what the Washington football team's year has been?
Oh, I know.
I mean, if you're a beat writer on that team, holy cow. When does it stop flying at you? You start with the fact that they changed the damn name of the team, which has been a 50-year, you know, discussion, right? So they don't have a name. They're the team to be named later. And then you go and you hire a head coach in Ron Rivera who, God forbid, I mean, he gets cancer.
I know.
I mean, the guy's battling cancer in a new job. Oh, and the organization is a complete train wreck because everybody's being sued for sexual harassment, including...
Get the worst owner in football.
Yeah, the worst
owner in sports.
Probably. Maybe. Absolutely. And meddles way too much and wanted to draft Dwayne Haskins, all this stuff. Oh, yeah, by the way, your franchise quarterback, you cut him towards the end of the year. Your other quarterback...
A week after he started a game that you needed to win.
That you had to win. And that was the same week, by the way, that he was seen with a bunch of strippers and not wearing a mask.
And so toxic that you didn't even want him in your building.
Yeah.
Not even to be the backup.
But you started him anyway, and he lost, and then you cut him.
And what's the guy whose leg we almost had to cut off? Let's bring him back in.
That's 17 surgeries. I mean, Alex Smith is a miracle. He's a medical marvel. I mean, they didn't know save his leg. They didn't know they could save his life.
Yeah, no, I know. It's
a
great story.
He shouldn't even be here. It's an unbelievable. He's 5-1 since he took over this football team. 5-1 with a guy that was your number three, and it was sort of like, yeah, let's let him come back just so he can say, you know, he made it back, and pat him on the head, and look, kids, you can do anything you want if you put your
mind. Every time that guy goes back to pass, I hold my breath. I don't want to see him get hit.
Did you see that game where he cleated? He stuck a cleat in himself?
Yes.
He spiked himself?
Well,
and all
you
this
didn't
blood
know.
Was gushing out of his sock.
Like, but we didn't know that that's what happened.
Is that the leg?
We didn't know that he got stepped on. We just thought, oh, my gosh, his leg just started bleeding for no reason.
This can't be good. It's going to fall off.
And the first game he played, remember, he went in like midway through the game. But they were playing the Rams.
Yeah,
and Aaron Donald jumped on him. You're like, oh, like, no.
Yeah.
I was waiting for that, like the Theismann, like the, you know,
exactly.
The snap of the leg.
They broke him
but
again.
I'm telling you, Rick, so as soon as they win that game Sunday night, and I'm thinking, so the first thing I think is, the Bucks, this is exactly what they want. The Bucks will kill this team. And then what happens is what always happens is you start to overthink it, and you say, Chase Young, I mean, nice player.
You want me to tell you how the Washington football team could win this game?
Hold on. And then they got Riverboat Ron. I thought what you said, and they, you know, and Chase Young, he might be a defensive player of the year some of the year. And Alex Smith, he's not totally inept. And then I thought, no, you know what? Now I'm overthinking it. There's no chance. I'm telling you right now, there is no chance.
Of course, Nostra Thomas, there's a chance.
I know what you always say. They're in the game. There's a chance. There is no chance.
You sound like my sports editor before we went to the NFC Championship game when the Bucks were playing the Eagles. And he didn't really think about what would happen in the Super Bowl because he said, well, there was no chance they were going to win.
Before you tell me why, let me just run this down because I was just looking at this a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And they start off the season, they beat Philadelphia, and they end the season by beating Philadelphia. So those are two of their seven wins. And then in between, here's what we got. They played Arizona, they got creamed. They played Cleveland, they got blown out. They got blown out by Baltimore. They got blown out by the Rams. Then they lose to the Giants, who stink. Now, here are their wins. They beat Dallas, lose again to the Giants, lose again to Detroit. And then here's their wins. They beat Cincinnati, bad. Dallas, bad. Pittsburgh, when Pittsburgh started reeling. San Francisco, bad. Like, they did. They have. You and I say it all the time. I say it more than anybody. You play who's on your schedule.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're just making the reverse argument of why the Bucks aren't any good because they haven't beaten anyone.
But they won they won 11 of those games, and they're not getting. I mean, they lost 9 games, and none of them, and other than like a couple of them, they were blowouts. I mean, they beat Philadelphia twice, and Philadelphia did everything in the world. And we'll talk about it maybe later in the week on your podcast. Philadelphia did everything in the world not to win that game.
Yes.
I'm looking at their team, Rick. Tell me how.
I'll tell you how.
How it could happen. I'm not. Predicting it to happen. I'm saying how could it happen?
Well, I'm not going to predict it to happen, but it would not. Nothing would shock me. Listen, the first thing you got to look at is who was their quarterback in those games you mentioned? And it wasn't Alex Smith.
Yeah, Haskins.
It wasn't Alex Smith. Alex Smith is 5-1. Okay? I think that matters. We just got done talking about why the Bucs have won all these games. It was because their quarterback. It wasn't because Mike Evans played harder for Tom Brady. He might play a little smarter. Might have gotten some tips here and there. Chris Godwin was still Chris Godwin. He tried to catch every ball that Jameis threw him. So we've already established what that position means. Alex Smith is a pure freaking winner, okay? He knows how to win. More importantly, he knows how not to lose games, which in this league, is more games are probably lost than are won.
No, you're right about that.
So he protects the football. He knows what he has around him. They don't try to take big shots down the field. They got one receiver that's really good and, you know, a decent running game. And, you know, they drag you into the mud. They're that team you talked about years ago, you know, the hockey team that trapped everybody, right?
Right.
And that's sort of what the Washington football team is. They've got a really good defense. You're going to have to earn every blade of grass against those guys. Those guys are like energized. They play so hard. And Chase Young is the real deal, man.
Yeah, he is.
Not many rookies
have
got the C on their chest. I mean, he hunts and he hunts and he hunts. And even if he's wrong, he's going 100 miles an hour. Same thing is true with Montez Sweat. Then you got a veteran like Ryan Kerrigan. These guys just flat out get after it on every single play, which means when Alex has played and they haven't turned it over very much, they're in every game, and they've won 5 out of 6. So keep that in mind when you're trying to figure out how do they win. Well, they win with a guy that has won 5 out of 6. He didn't play the other games. That's probably why they lost. So now you've got Alex Smith at quarterback, and look, I mean, first of all, they don't have to be a better team than the Buccaneers. You know, if we're just going to go on rankings, this isn't college football, right? Like, we're not going to say, you know, this team won a division, they're 7-9. They have no business in the playoffs based on their record. There's a bunch of teams that are going to win 10, 11 games that don't get in the playoffs, right? But that's the way the rules, them the rules, as they say.
Oh, I'm fine with them being in.
So they get in at 7-9, and everybody goes, well, they don't have any chance, they're 7-9. You know what they called them? Division champions, and they're hosting, right? So, I know the formula. The Bucs have lost games to teams that pressure Tom Brady. We know this about any quarterback, particularly with Tom. He ain't leaving the pocket. He ain't running out there and extending plays. He's not escaping pressure. If you can get him, if you can get to him and put him on the ground and hit him early, he's not going to be very good. He wasn't very good against the Bears when he got hit. He wasn't very good against the Saints either time he got hit. He wasn't very good against the Rams. You know, these are the games that he has struggled. And what are the Washington football team does? They rush the passer. As good as they're like fourth in the league in sacks. I mean, they're way up there.
Rick, it's gonna be one of those games that like
gonna be an ugly
some goofy stuff happens. They're gonna
have turnover,
a punt return, punt return, a pick six.
Maybe. Yeah.
A couple of like Ronald Jones fumbles twice or something.
Well, there you go. Isn't there always look
Is there a chance those things
guy.
Can happen? Yes.
Of course.
But if everybody goes out there and plays the way they have played for 17 weeks, I think the Bucs win this game easily. Easily. I don't think it's close. Washington's bad, man. You watched that game Sunday night.
Yeah,
they
did.
They won that game. And it
was handed to them, and they didn't want to take it.
They
were trying not to win. I saw it. I did. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're a better football team than the Bucs. I'm going to tell you they don't have to be. What I'm going to say is they just have to be better on Saturday.
You sound like Herb Brooks, man.
Yeah, it was true.
We played them 10 out of 10. We might win 9. Might win 9. But
you've lived this
tonight.
Movie. You know what it's like.
Yeah.
You know, would it surprise you go out there and, you know, here's Ronald Jones with, you know, his finger taped up and coming off of COVID. And he had a pretty good game, you know, when they got him out of the game against – their last game against Atlanta. But he goes out there and he fumbles twice. Would that shock you?
No.
I mean, the running game hasn't been consistent all year.
I just can't think. I don't see Washington scoring. I just don't think
they'll score. Well, that's how they score. You give them a short field. They don't have to go very far.
Right.
Or they just, you know what else they could do? And I can't believe I'm, like, trying to make a case here. But what else they could do is just possession you to death. You know, 11 plays. I mean, that's what Atlanta did. Listen, If Atlanta, they're down there inside the 5-yard line twice and came away with field goals. You know, if they punch either or both of those in, and the Washington football team could, then all of a sudden you're in a dogfight. You know, you're losing that game. So, you know, they held the ball. You know, when you give Tom Brady, you know, 2-3 possessions and a half, there ain't a whole lot he can do about it. So that's what I mean. Like there is a form. They're going to try to mud up the game. They're going to try to make it a muddy game, drag you into where they're comfortable, which is not many points. You know, each possession means everything. Every third down is crucial. And that's sort of the way
it
works.
I told you last week or a couple of weeks ago that the team I was afraid of was Dallas, not because Dallas is any good either. But I looked at Dallas's offense and I thought they're at least capable of scoring a little bit. I just don't think Washington's capable of.
They're not going to score a lot of points. You're right. No, and I mean, think the Bucs ultimately, if the Bucs score 30, this is over. If they score 28, it's over.
Yeah, if this game's in the teens and it's one of those, late third quarter scores, you know, like 14,
they lost 20-19 to the Bears.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of game that this would have to be. Right. And I'm not saying that they would lose by a lot, but yeah, they definitely could. Now, I don't expect that to happen. You know, it's going to be around, the temperature is going to be freezing. There's sleet coming in the day before, so if that's weather system is any delayed at all, that won't be good. So, you know, the field was pretty bad and pretty slick the other day locally in Tampa. I know there's a bunch of guys that are used to playing in the cold and playing in playoffs in the cold, starting with your quarterback and Gronkowski and Antonio Brown and Jason Pierre-Paul. But you know what? There's a hell of a lot of guys that have never done it. They've never been in the playoffs, and they don't go up north and play outside very much. They just don't. You know, the one game they played was indoors in Detroit. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know. It's there for them. I mean, if they win this game, they're going to go probably to either Green Bay or New Orleans. If there's an upset somewhere else, if the Rams say go beat Seattle or something, then they're going to go to New Orleans, which it's interesting. Let me ask you this. If you're the Bucs and you're on that staff or you whatever, you're invested. Like, and I told you, you got two choices here. You want to play the Rams, or I'm sorry, you want to play the Saints in New Orleans. We've lost twice to those guys and really haven't played them well in 2 years, or do you want to play Green Bay in the second round and try to go up there and beat them for a second time in the snow and all that crap?
Boy, that's a great question, because for two reasons. One, I think the Saints are the best team. I think the Saints are the best team in the NFC, even though everybody's afraid of Green Bay. But I also could see Drew Brees having one of those. What's wrong with Drew Brees? Is his arm hurt today? Like, he's capable of one of those games where he doesn't look like himself. And the Saints always find a way, it seems, to like somehow screw it up or get themselves screwed by somebody, including the referees. Boy, I don't know, Rick. I was going to say Green Bay, but I don't know that I want any parts of Lambeau at any time in January.
I would say this. To me, you're probably going to go through New Orleans anyway.
Yeah.
And to me, I would want them in the second round, because if I have to go to Green Bay and the weather's an issue and they're the number one seed, and Rodgers is playing really, really well, I don't want to do it unless it's 60 minutes to a Super Bowl. 60 minutes, we go to the Super Bowl. To me, New Orleans don't want to see you until the championship game. They don't. They'll take their chances just like you would in a championship. They have the upper hand. They think, we'd love to see the Bucs. Whenever we see them, we own these guys. That's what they think.
Right.
But they also have their own demons, and their own demons are, you know, the Minneapolis Miracle and the non-call, and this is Breeze's last year, and he's got some cracked ribs, and.
Right.
You know, so they got their own pressure, right? They're going to be expected to win. They've beaten this team twice. A little like Philadelphia the year that the Bucks, you know, went up there and won to go to the Super Bowl. Like, I'm telling you, no one thought that the Bucs would win that game,
right,
including the Eagles. So, to me, I think as a friend, you're playing indoors. You know, you wouldn't have to worry about the elements. You're a different football team. You're a way better football team than you were even the last time you got destroyed by them.
Yeah.
So,
I would be more scared of Aaron Rodgers than Drew Brees.
I look at the way teams are playing, and I mean, I think New Orleans is playing good. A couple weeks ago, they weren't. I mean, but Brees is still only 2 weeks, you know, from 11 cracked ribs and a punctured lung.
Right.
And they don't, you know. So, it's, listen.
That's why they play the games, Tommy.
But isn't it fun to talk about? Like, if you're a Bucks fan,
sure.
And you turn on, you know, Get Up or you know, NFL Network, whatever, they're talking about your team.
Yeah.
They're saying you guys have a chance.
Yeah, and we're not sitting here going, oh, Brady, what a disaster Brady was, and they got to get rid of Arians, and they got to bring in another, you know.
Right.
Which is what would have happened if they would have gone 7-9 or 6-10.
Well, even when the Bucks went, remember, let's go to the Wayback Machine when the Bucks would go to the playoffs a lot? Did you ever really think they were going to make that run? I mean, Trent Dilfer was your quarterback at first.
No, that's a great point. I mean,
and then it was Sean King taking you to the championship game against the greatest show on turf and almost won 6-5.
Right.
And then it was Jeff Garcia and Brian Griese. Okay?
No, there is a feeling now that I don't think they're going to win it all, but I also think it's possible.
If the confetti falls on Tom Brady's head.
Right, not shocked at all. I can see it. Not only not shocked, I can see it.
You can watch. We've seen it. We know it happens.
But like Washington, if you're in Washington right now or you're Indianapolis, like you're not going to win the Super Bowl. You have no chance.
No, there's about, listen, and Sean Payton said this before the season. He goes, legitimately, there's about 4 or 5 teams going to win Super Bowl every year. The rest of them are just
deluded. Well, and I think Tampa Bay, I think right now there are probably about those number of teams, but I think Tampa Bay is one of them.
I think they are.
Yeah.
I think they are. I think, you know, in the NFC, it's interesting because I think in the AFC, there's two teams. There's only two teams going to Super Bowl.
I agree. Buffalo and
Kansas City. That's it. Yep. Nobody else. I don't care what team. You can run the ball all you want to, and Lamar Jackson can do it. Two teams can win it in the AFC, Kansas City and Buffalo. And I think Buffalo's going to win it.
Everybody seems to be gathering momentum. I think that's
they're so good.
They are really good.
Let's see what happens when they get, you know, in the big spotlight and expectations and all that. I get it.
I think Kansas City flips a switch.
They might. They're bored. They're a little bored at 14-1, but yeah. But it's going to be one of those two teams. In the NFC, three teams, maybe four. I mean, could I see Russell Wilson getting there? Maybe.
It's not out of the realm of possibility.
I think it's crazy.
Three teams.
He's been there before.
I think it's New Orleans, Green Bay, Tampa Bay.
That's my
guess. In that order, unfortunately.
I might go Green Bay, New Orleans, Tampa. But I'm interested to see what happens even if New Orleans has to go to Green Bay, because New Orleans' defense is so much better than Green Bay's.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other thing that happened that people are discounting a little bit is they lost their left tackle. You know how hard it is when you lose David Bakhtiari, who is maybe the best left tackle in football, and that's Aaron Rodgers' blindside, and everything he does, all their schemes doesn't require extra help, a chip, or a tight end, nothing. And all of a sudden, you know, that guy's gone.
Right.
That's a big deal. You know, it's a really big deal, so.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quickly, before we get out of here, the Hall of Fame finalists were announced. And a little surprise, maybe not a surprise, but something new. We've known about John Lynch. He's back in the final. When we say the finals, this means there's 15 players, modern era players that could that'll be debated in the room with the voters, and then it'll be announced the eve of the Super Bowl here in Tampa.
That five get
who
in,
the
right?
Five modern day finalists are. There'll be a couple senior candidates, whatnot.
Or expect up to five.
Up to five. That's right. It doesn't have to be five. It's all between you and me. It's always five.
Yeah,
I mean, they would put in 10 if they could, but
sure.
Anyway, both John Lynch, again, for the eighth year in a row, a finalist, and Rondé Barber in the room for the first time. He's been a semifinalist four other occasions. And so now you got Barber and Lynch. I'll say this about the class. To me, and I'll read the class to you, Tom, you tell me who you think is a first ballot and how many spots that all these guys will be vying for. Somebody from Indianapolis, most likely, or Denver, whoever the voter is, will stand up and say, ladies and gentlemen, Peyton Manning, and they'll sit down. And there will be no presentation.
That's the presentation.
Because there doesn't need to be.
That's the case for the Hall of Fame. Peyton Manning.
Same thing that happened with Brett Favre. Same thing. You know what I mean? There's certain guys you don't need to make any argument. You just say, Peyton Manning. And he's going through. Okay? So as I go through this, you know, you tell me if I hit on a guy that you think, oh, yeah, no, he's first. I don't even have to debate it.
And this is just first. Like, I haven't studied the stats or anything.
No, just, no. You're just like, to me, and to me, this is the way to do it, right? Because if it pops in your head, oh, yeah, he's.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Yeah, it's a feel thing. Yeah, it's,
Peyton Manning.
Yes, no.
We all agree.
Yes, of course.
Okay, Jared Allen, Vikings defensive end. Jaguars, Tony Boselli, played 7 years.
Okay, only 7 years, and that's a bit of a problem, but he's a Hall of Famer in my mind.
Okay. Packers safety, Leroy Butler.
No, the first ballot, like automatic? No.
Right. Just stop me when you say, oh, he's this year. Steelers guard, Alan Faneca, has been in the room a lot. Rams receiver, Torrey Holt. Lions receiver, Calvin Johnson.
Yes, I do think Calvin Johnson.
First ballot?
Yeah, because I think there was a good chunk there, maybe 3 or 4 years, that he was the best wide receiver in football.
Okay. A Packers linebacker, Clay Matthews. No. Saints linebacker, Sam Mills. Mm-mm. Patriots defensive lineman Richard Seymour.
I'm sure Seymour's numbers are much better than I remember them, but no.
They're good. Dolphins linebacker, and he's been in the room a bunch. This guy's a first-year guy. Dolphins linebacker Zach Thomas. Yeah. Colts receiver Reggie Wayne. Yeah. Raiders and Packers defensive back Charles Woodson.
Yeah, I'm a big Woodson guy.
Yeah. To me, I'll just say this. To me, Manning and Woodson are first-ballot guys.
Yes, I agree.
The rest of them will all be debated. Now, there might be another guy that goes through in the first ballot, like a Calvin Johnson or somebody like that. Most of these other guys have been in the room before. So, to me, there's maybe 2 to 3 spots. We're talking about 5 players, right? And I know just from being in there that this could be Faneca's year, or it could be Boselli's year. One of those guys are getting in. Because right. We had when I voted the 1 year, going back a while when the Super Bowl was in Atlanta, there was a logjam of offensive linemen. And every year they got 1 or 2 through. And this kind of goes this way.
Faneca does feel like it could
feels like it's his
turn.
Time.
His
it's him or Boselli. But, yeah, it's probably Faneca's time. The rest of them, nobody has been in that room more than John Lynch. 8 years in a row. When he went in for the first time 8 years ago, every one of the class – of that year have now gotten enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's the only one of his class that's not in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I think he came really, from what I hear, as close as you can come last year. Didn't get in. He's back as a finalist again. And there is something to the queue, right? I mean, the longer you're in there, waited your turn, you know, you're not playing any more games, but, you know, there's obviously momentum if you keep coming back in that room. So he's really close. But here comes Ronnie Barber. And they're different players, but from the same team, the same era, both defensive backs. I'm just wondering if that could, like, fracture the voting. If
I think that's a fair point.
If they stand up there and they hear Ronnie Barber, who's got a great case for the Hall of Fame, does that detract from Lynch's chances of getting in?
I do think so. And this is not fair, but I'm sure this is how people think, Rick, because this is how we all think when it comes to Hall of Fames.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not always reasonable when we discuss this stuff. But I'm sure, I bet you this argument is made. I've never been in that room.
No, I'll tell you whether it's made. Go ahead.
But I would guess that there are some people say, okay, we're talking about a great defense. We already put Warren Sapp in there. We already put Derek Brooks in there.
That's right.
How many more guys were going to put in on a defense that won one Super Bowl? Sorry, they won
one.
They
absolutely say that. They absolutely say that.
And where you see, like, there have been teams that have only won one Super Bowl. Kansas City, the great Kansas City, that didn't even win it. Well, they did win one in 1970 or whatever it was. I think they have a few guys in
there. They have a lot of guys on there, yeah.
But I bet you the argument would be like, well, I mean, no, that's too many bucks. From the
they
same
were
team.
Great for a long time. There's a couple things going against them. That, the one Super Bowl, had they won more, that would have helped. And the fact that they're a small market team, and I'm sorry, but there's a lot of big market writers in there. 47 voters, whatever, a lot of them from big cities. In general, it's not like the NFC South fares very well. So, yeah, you know, it's going to be a tough argument. Although I've done the argument myself. What's going to help John this year, and to some extent Rondé, is the fact that two of the voters that they have now have, you know, people who have coached or played the game that are now part of this group, and the guys that just got elected to go in there and be voters includes Tony Dungy and Bill Polian.
Yeah.
So those guys, when they speak, they're going to be very influential. And I think both of them are Lynch guys. I think both of them are Rondé guys. You know,
I think that Lynch has run into, Rick, and again, you can tell me whether I'm right or wrong, but as somebody who's is back from it a little bit, yeah, and probably watched Lynch about the same as a lot of the writers in that room have watched Lynch, it's hard to, I bet you the case for him is hard to make because he doesn't have numbers. It's not a numbers. Doesn't have the interceptions. Plays a position where a defensive back where you're going to, like a guy like a Woodson does have
safeties. Numbers. First of all, safeties are hard. There were, right, up until a few years ago, I think there was very few, if any, that were even in the Hall of Fame because it's a hard position to define, right?
Right. Now, I always thought that, and you covered the guy. You were there. You know what it was like. You know what that defense was like. Just as an outside, I've always felt like if there was a Hall of really good, John Lynch would be in it. I just don't know that he's that. I just don't never thought of him as being that elite.
Like, yeah, top. I think he is a Hall of Famer. I didn't think he was going to go in the first few years. I didn't think it would take him 8. What hurts him is when you compare his numbers to some guys, you know, that are in the Hall of Fame at safety. He's got 26 interceptions, which right, just is not a lot of interceptions. Now, he made 9 Pro Bowls for whatever the Pro Bowl is worth back then. It meant something, right?
I think, and I think that is a number that people do pay attention to.
And they do. And the fact that, you know, he is in 2 rings of honor, which is not, look, he played a long time in Tampa Bay from whatever it was, like
93
to 2003.
Right.
Okay. And he made a lot of Pro Bowls and won a Super Bowl here. And then the Bucs cut him because he failed a physical, or so they said. But he didn't fail it in Denver. And he went out there and was asked to do something kind of entirely different at the safety position. And he went out there and made 4 straight Pro Bowls again.
Yeah.
And ended up with 9.
In 4 years.
And is in their Ring of Honor and went to the AFC Championship game. So he was great, you know, because a lot of people would say, well, hell, you're playing with Warren Sapp and Simeon Rice and Derrick Brooks and Rondé Barber. Like, you know, how good could you have been? You know, I mean, it can't be hard when you get those guys. Well, guess what? When he went to Denver, they had nobody.
Right.
Nobody. There's no Hall. You know what I mean? So he was great when he wasn't around those guys, when Warren Sapp wasn't crawling up the quarterback's backside. So I would look at that. What hurts him, like I said, is the interceptions and the fact that because his best years were sort of in the middle of one decade to the middle of the next decade. Mm-hmm. He's not on either decade team.
Right.
Yeah. He's not on the 90s decade team because he played at the end of the 90s when he was really good, starting in 97.
Right.
And then he was done playing by 2007.
Right.
So he didn't make an all-decade team. Rondé did. He doesn't have a lot of interceptions. Rondé does. He does.
Rondé's got that goofy, you know, the goofy sacks.
He's got the stat with the sacks and the interceptions. The only, you know, that's another thing. You're like, if you're the only player to do something in this league, if it's singularly yours, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, he revolutionized that slot corner position. And here's the other thing he has, a signature play.
Yeah.
A signature play Rondé Barber has is the interception, you know, return 98 yards for a touchdown that sent the Bucs to the Super Bowl, and they won it, of course. But that play will for until the next one gets him to the Super Bowl, will be the greatest play in Bucs history. Like we talked about Marty St. Louis' goal, right, in game 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the greatest goal in Lightning history, right?
I'd make it, you know, despite all the home runs, like game 162, and now we got the Brett Phillips play.
Yeah.
I think the Rondé play is the greatest play
in Tampa Bay sports. For what it meant, for what it propelled them to.
Yeah.
All of that. And so John doesn't have that. So there's a lot of when you go in there and you check boxes as these guys often do, I can make a case for both. And in some respects, because Ronnie has all decade and some other things, some people may not, the thing that's going to hurt Rondé is they're going to say, okay, let's start talking about the corners that are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Charles Woodson, is he that guy? Deion Sanders. You're right. Telling me Ronnie Barber's Deion Sanders quality?
Right. Mel Blount.
Yeah. Mel Blount. Daryl Green.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Hey, nah. Are they going to be the same team with those guys? See, that's what happens is they, you know, it's apples to oranges. It really,
right.
It's hard to compare era. It's even harder to compare players sometimes. But I think they're both Hall of Famers. And look, I think Rondé's going to have to wait his turn because there's a queue, basically, that, you know, unless you're a first ballot like Manning or somebody, you know, that's just going to have to wait. So, interesting, though.
Yeah.
That, got two bucks in there. So, what we got coming on at pointer.org?
Oh,
there was an election, I guess, somewhere in, was it Georgia?
Georgia. We're still counting votes, I think, in Georgia.
Oh, you'll be counting them for a while, my friend.
Probably, yeah.
Unless it goes a certain way, and then, of course, they'll just declare winners.
Electoral College,
matter.
We got rallies, we got who knows what's coming next. It's just bedlam.
The Capitol is falling. Oh, man. It's a crazy time.
For sure.
But go to check out what Tommy writes in pointer.org. O-R-G. That's pointer.org. I heard somebody say something about Pointer the other day on the radio. I can't remember who it was, but I laughed because they actually... They got it right.
Oh wow!
Yeah, was it some? It was somebody that was a radio talent. I can't remember. I'll
talking
come
about
up with
Pointer.
It.
Wow, I have to find out.
Yeah, they mentioned Pointer. They didn't mention you, but they mentioned
Pointer.
Wow,
so that's good.
Probably. Hey, come back tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit more. We'll talk a little sports. What do you think?
Tanking. Let's talk about tanking. I want
to
get.
Oh,
into
I want to talk. Thanks for remember. Thanks for reminding me. We'll do that.
No, sounds good.
All right, Tom Jones. If you didn't get enough, he'll be back in Better Than Ever tomorrow. We'll be talking about tanking. And we're going to discuss the Heisman Trophy voting, as well as we've got a new job for Peyton Manning. You'll want to hear it. So for Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.